Okay. Last week, we discussed the question of the mitzvah to study philosophy and the Rambam's view concerning the value of studying Ma'aseh Bereishis, Ma'aseh Merkava, the idea that he explains in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah that to fulfill the five mitzvos of Anochi, Lo Yiyah, Achdus Hashem, Avas Hashem, and Yerushamayim, one has to consider certain matters. And a number of you raised the issue, especially towards the end of the shiur, which was the following. Is it strictly speaking necessary to turn to philosophy to understand or to arrive at a proper perspective on Hashkafa, on the Torah's to understand the Torah's philosophy, or perhaps from within the Torah itself, and especially from the studying of mitzvos, is that possible as well? And we're going to begin today with sources that make that point, both from a mystical perspective as well as from a non-mystical perspective. One example of a source that describes how the Torah's deepest secrets and truest perspective could be seen from within the mitzvos is a passage from the Shlah. If you turn to page, let's see, page 7 on the bottom. So, one of the questions that bothered some thinkers is that many of the mitzvos, seem to be very this-worldly. Shor Shenagach HaSapara. How can it be that by studying Shor Shenagach HaSapara, one can arrive at a correct understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? They seem to have nothing to do with each other. Maybe Shor Shenagach HaSapara is an important halacha to know so that society runs smoothly, so that people who are damaged will be compensated appropriately. Nobody's going to deny that it has a value in that respect. But is it something that helps us understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Shlah writes that we have to understand that the entire Torah is an instantiation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it does in fact help us arrive at a correct understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so many of the stories in the Torah are a levush, a cloak for these deeper inner truths. And if you study the cloak, you could arrive at the deeper inner truths. The Shlah writes that this is one of the reasons why the study of Torah and the study of Halacha can in fact bring a person to a correct conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a deeper conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even one that goes well beyond that which could be attained through philosophy, because after all, philosophy is simply the studying of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the human seichel. Philosophy is based off of our mind. Our mind is quite limited in what we're able to comprehend and certainly what we're able to come up with on our own. But Torah, which is the Devar Hashem, and all of Torah, which is the Devar Hashem, will in fact bring us to this correct understanding. And that's why many sources, there's a passage here in the Zohar, in your source books on page 8, which I think, well, maybe we'll return to a little later, but that talks about, warns about the dangers of studying, of understanding mitzvot superficially, and especially understanding the stories of the Torah superficially. The Zohar writes that if all you think is that the stories of the Torah are just stories, so you'll have better stories among folk wisdom and folk stories, and there are novels with better stories. You don't need to go to the Torah for its stories, for its narrative aspect. Rather, the stories of the Torah and the mitzvos of the Torah allow one to come to the deeper truth. And one of the things that Schloss says in this context is a fascinating idea. He discusses the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that refers to, in Perek Lamed Aleph, that refers to the Bris Chadasha. Now, the Torah seems to be telling us that La'asad Lavo B'mos HaMashiach, there will be a new covenant, a Bris Chadasha. That's obviously a pasuk which has at times been used to support a very problematic theory, right? Maybe that implies that the Torah will no longer be relevant. We won't have to observe the Torah. Maybe it's already taken place. But even if it hasn't taken place, the Rambam writes that one of the Yud Gimel Ikar Yamuna is the Nitzchias HaTorah. So what does Bris Chadasha mean in light of the Nitzchias HaTorah? So Rishonim have a number of interpretations. If you look at the Shla, at first he quotes the Radak's understanding that it relates to the fact that we're going to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we'll never again distance ourselves from that closeness. The Ramban in his Per Shel HaTorah coming up in a couple of weeks in Parshas Nitzavim says that the pshat is that it's a reference to the fact that B'Yemos HaMashiach Hashem will be Meser as Arlas Levavenu, and therefore we won't have a Yetzer Hara to do that, which is wrong. But then the Shla presents the Panimius HaDavar, which sounds like at first glance a very radical idea. He writes where it's underlined again towards the bottom of page 7. Aval yesh od pnimius ledavar zeh. Ki noda kimo shenisgashem ha'adam kein nisgashma ha'torah. Ki ilu haya ha'adam nishar bikasnos or began eden haysa ha'torah muvenes b'inyan yoser ruchani. In other words, the understanding of the Torah very much depends on who we are as people. And had we remained more spiritual people, had we not sinned with the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, so that the truth of the Torah would have been conveyed in more spiritual terms. Kemo shekasav hapardes b'shar ha'neshama, ki eich shayach losach loshur v'chamor v'chitzarech harisha b'gan Eden u'chiyotzi b'zeh. Imagine what would have happened had Adam not sinned. So, in Gan Eden, presumably, there was no need for Harisha. We need to do Harisha because of the curse following the chait that thorns and thistles shall grow in the place where you plant your seeds. So, if there was no chait, there would be no thorns and thistles, there would be no need for Harisha. So, what would the mitzvah of Losach Som Shor B'disho, or that's Disha, Losach Lo Shor V'chamor Yachtav, what would those mitzvos have meant? Ukiyote b'zeh. Harbe. Ella, says the Shla, Shehayamuvan b'inyan ruchani, ma shenikra shor v'chamor. Kein la'asid, shiyachsor ha'olam, tifsho tatora gashmiyusa, v'yiskaimu mitzvoseh kafi hamuvan ba'esahi. So, the ideas of the Torah reflect spiritual ideas. Shor v'chamor is not just a reference to an ox and a donkey. And la'asid lavo, when we return to a state of Adam HaRishon Kodem Achet, so we will understand the Torah in that way. The Torah will shed its corporeality, its physicality. V'yiskaimu mitzvoseh kafi hamuvan ba'isahi. V'kal lahavin, aval hakol hi zu ha'Torah be'atzma. Rak ora ya'ir bi'oser, kemo sha'adam gamkein. V'kal lahavin. So it's the same Torah. It's not the pshat that the Bris Chadasha means there'll be a new Torah. And the Shla makes quite clear in the context, especially earlier in that piece, that he 100% accepts the Rambam's belief in Nitzchias HaTorah. However, he says that there's a deeper understanding of the Torah, and one aspect of that deeper understanding of the Torah will only become available la'asid lavo as we become more spiritual people. Along the similar lines, the Gra writes in Yahel Or, ul'asid yisgala hasod shebetocho, v'zehu ha-Torah chadasha, shisgal ul'asid. The Shlomo says, the Gra says the exact same thing. What's the Torah chadasha that will be mizgal ul'asid? That's the idea that the sodos ha-Torah will become clear. Right now, because we're ensconced in a more physical world, so naturally our ability to understand some of these more spiritually refined concepts is limited. Once we achieve a higher degree of spirituality, so then we will have a deeper understanding. But even today, the Shlomo stresses, we are able to get below the surface. We're able to scratch below the surface. And the Shlomo writes, therefore, all of the mitzvos, even mitzvos like Lo Sachrosh, Bishor V'chamor, and the like, even these mitzvos, which seem to only relate to the physical aspects of this world, that seem to be very physical, really have a deeper meaning. And this deeper meaning allows us to arrive at a closer understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which Lasad Lavo will be able to fully appreciate. This is the idea also, without getting into details of the Ramban's Medrash that he quotes in his Hakdama, that the Torah originally existed with black fire, meaning the letters, on white fire of parchment. The idea is, that Ramban explains over there, that Torah is Nitzchi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Nitzchi, and Torah reflects the Chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, every aspect of Torah must reflect HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eternal essence. And that's what we mean when we say Histakel be'oraiso bari alma. That's what we mean when we say the Tanya, the Bala Tanya explains in Sefer Tanya Perek Dalet. That's what we mean when we say Oraisa v'kudsha b'richu kula chad. What does it mean? Yisrael v'oraisa v'kudsha b'richu chadu. It's not just a Simchas Torah song, right? What's the chad? The chad is, yeah, through the Torah, through the mitzvos, even the seemingly physical aspect, a person can arrive at a correct understanding, a true understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Lashon of the Bala Tanya, which is on page 9 of your sources, Perush, De'oraisa hi chachmaso u'retzono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atmo. Kul achad. Kiwa yodea vuhu amada v'chulei. Kemoshikasav l'el b'shem Rambam, v'tzimtzem HaKadosh Baruch Hu ritzono v'chachmaso b'taryag mitzvos ha-Torah uv'hilchoseihen. B'chdei shekol ha-neshama al-ruach v'nefesh shebeguf ha-adam tuchal lahasigan b'da'ata. So again, the chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is instantiated in the taryag mitzvos, and therefore even studying the taryag mitzvos, one could arrive at these greater appreciations of the truth. So that's the first perspective, as I said, a more mystical perspective of how studying halacha, studying the taryag mitzvos, a person can understand, come to an understanding of Ribono Shel Olam. Right now we'll consider another perspective, I'll take your question just 1 second, which is one that says that even through a non-mystical perspective of halacha and taryag mitzvos, can we come to an appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
When we're talking about this sort of the mitzvahs, are we talking about Tamei mitzvahs? We're talking about
Tamei mitzvahs might be one aspect, but not. It's definitely not limited to Tamei mitzvahs. In other words, and this gets to a broader topic of Tamei mitzvahs, which I hope, God willing, to get back to. One of the Tamei mitzvos do seem to seek to understand the pnimius of a mitzvah. After all, we try to understand the reason for the mitzvah. And there's no doubt that understanding the reason of the mitzvah will bring us to a greater appreciation of the mitzvah. Like the Rambam famously says at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, when he writes that we should try to understand the mitzvos to the extent that we possibly can. We should try to understand their reasons. And when it comes to a mitzvah that we don't understand, so then we have to say, okay, that's the Ratzon Hashem, but still, to the extent that we can understand, we should understand. One of the objections to the pursuit of Tamei HaMitzvos, and especially the approach that at least the Rambam takes in Mor Nevuchim, is that it doesn't arrive at the pnimius of the mitzvah, because it tries to understand the mitzvah from an external perspective. the Rav in Halachic Mind writes very starkly that the Rambam failed in his approach to Tamei Mitzvos precisely because he looked at mitzvos from an outside perspective. How would an outsider see value in the mitzvos? And he gives answers, but that's not the proper path. The Rav therefore says the proper path is to try to understand mitzvos from within. And that's not generally referred to as Tamei Mitzvos, but I think the Rav would have said that emerges from Lamdas, from understanding the dinim of the mitzvos and seeing how the panemius of the mitzvah, the tam of the mitzvah, the perspective of the mitzvah, the ratzon of the mitzvah emerges from within and not from an outside perspective. But there's no doubt that, as we're about to explain in a moment, that too relates to this. So the Rav, since we're on that topic, as you all know, also recommended that we try to arrive at a conceptual understanding of mitzvos and halacha and the like, but not this conceptual understanding of the shla, which is very esoteric. But like we just said, if we try to understand the lamdas of the mitzvah, so that then we will arrive at the mitzvah's truest meaning. So that's what Brisker Lamdas tries to do. And the Rav very strongly writes, he writes in Halachic Man on page 17, Halachic Man's approach to reality at the outset devoid of any element of transcendence. The Rav basically explains, that's bottom of page 9, that the Halacha is the blueprint for the ideal world. He writes, Mahuta shel ha-halacha shekibla me'es HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki yitziras olam ideali v'hakaras hayachas ha-shorer beino limitzius al kol tofe oseha shorsheha v'ikareha. And that's basically the whole idea of Halachic Man. Now, what's so important to recognize is that this too is a way of coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Last week, Matt Lubin mentioned a diuk, or an idea Rav Rosenzweig wrote, which is that the Pasuk says after the Chet HaEgel that Moshe went and encamped Michutz LaMachane, and the Pasuk says, V'haya kol mevakesh Hashem, anyone who wanted to be mevakesh Hashem would go and see Moshe. So the Pashtus is we're talking about Halachic Shilos. And yet, that's considered to be Mevakesh Hashem in its highest possible form. Learning Halacha and understanding the mitzvos is Begadir Mevakesh Hashem. Rav Lichtenstein, take a look on page 10, sums up the Rav's approach as follows. Torah study gives the Jew insight, as direct and profound as man is privileged to attain, into the revealed will of his Creator. In other words, the Mekubalim were right that we get a better understanding of the Ribono Shel Olam through study of the mitzvos and halacha, and that's even preferable to the study of philosophy, but not through the study of the mitzvos in this transcendent way, but rather through the study of halacha, the immanent expression of God's transcendent rational will, man's knowledge of God gains depth and scope. Further, religious study is a stimulus to the total spiritual personality. Faith can neither be profound nor enduring unless the intellect is fully and actively engaged in the quest of God. So the study of halacha, perhaps even more than the study of machshava, facilitates communion, dveikus, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person delves into God's Torah and reveals its inner light and splendor and enjoys the pleasure of creativity and innovation, he merits communion with the giver of the Torah. Talmud Torah is dveikus. This idea, of course, is developed in the Nefesh HaChaim, in Shaar Dalet. Talmud Torah is dveikus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's dveikus even without the conscious awareness that, or at least total conscious awareness, that one is connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ideal of clinging to God is realized by means of coupling the intellect with the divine idea that is embodied in its rules, laws, and traditions. However, halachic knowledge does not remain sealed off in the realm of the intellect. It bursts forth into one's existential consciousness and merges with it. The idea turns into an encompassing and arousing experience. Knowledge into a divine fire. Strict and exacting halachic principles turn into a passionate love burning with a holy flame. Myriads of black letters into which have been gathered reams of laws, explanations, questions, problems, concepts, and measures descend from the cold and placid intellect, which calmly rests on its subtle abstractions and its systematic frameworks, to the heart full of trembling, fear, and yearning, and turn into sparks of the flame of a great experience that sweeps man to his creator. Like we saw last week, the intellectual pursuit and the emotional connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu are merged. They're not two separate realms. And the Rav writes that it's the study of halacha more than anything else that produces these feelings, that produces an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'd like to turn now to the question that we alluded to last week, which is the debate concerning the study of philosophy. What did Chazal think about the study of philosophy? So the truth is, there's not too much overt discussion in Chazal on the topic. In a couple of places, the Gemara refers to Chachma Yevanis. Take a look on page 10. The Gemara in Menachos Samach Dalet Amud Beis says that Chazal cursed someone who teaches their child Greek wisdom. This would seem to indicate that Chazal had a pretty negative attitude towards Greek philosophy and Greek wisdom. The Gemara in Menachos on Sadi Tes Amud Beis, also on page 10, tells us that basically Chachma Yevanis is Bittul Torah. It's okay to study Bizman She'eino Lo Yom V'lo Laila. Seems to indicate never, right? It's a waste of time. Ben Hashmashos, according to the Ritva, maybe, yeah. So it seems to be pretty negative. However, the truth is that these two sources are not really conclusive, because it's not so clear what Chachma Yevanis means. Chachma Yevanis might not be referring to philosophy. In fact, Rashi on Menachos Samach Vav Amud Beis understands that Chachma Yevanis is referring to Ramazim. It's not philosophy. Also, Tosos in Menachos, Meiri Sota, Mem Tes Amud Aleph, Rambam in the Mishnah and Sota, Tashbeitz and Avos Beis Yodalid, the Rivash, Mem He, and others all say that the Gemara's reference to Chachma Yevanis is not philosophy, rather it's some form of communication. And that's clear from the story. Again, I don't want to go too much into the details here, but the story over here, Tana Rabbanan Kshitsaru Malchei Beis Chashmonai Zel Zev Haya Horkanos Mi Bachutz Varistabulos Mi Bifnim V'chol Yom V'yom Hayu Mishal Shalin Lahan Dinarin Bekupo Malin Lahan Tmidin. So there was a civil war, and the one group was inside the Mikdash, one group had surrounded it from the outside, yet even the group from the outside wanted to support the Karban Tamid and would send up an animal in a bucket to be offered as a Tamid. Hayasham Zakin Echad Jayamakir B'chachmas Yevanis Laz Lahem B'chachmas Yevanis Amar Lahem Kozman she'asukin be'avoda einim sarim biyadchan, and therefore lemachar, instead of sending up a sheep, they sent up a chazir. And based off of that, they said arosh yilmad b'no chachmas yevanis. Doesn't sound like philosophy. Somehow or another, he was merames to them through this chachma yevanis, whatever exactly it is, that this is a bad idea. And likewise, the Maral says that the Gemara on Sadi Tesamid base that also says you shouldn't study Chachma Yevanis or only Bizman Shelo Yom Lo Laila is referring to this of Chachma Yevanis. The Maral writes in the Sivos Olam, which hmm, somehow is missing from the source sheets. But, oh, it's here at the bottom of page 11. Thank you. Bottom of page 11. He writes, the Ein Svara Lomar Kiyavsha Chachma Hich. V'yesh Lavin Raya Al Svara Zos Menachos Tzadi Tesla Veshal Ben Damas Achosol Shalvei Bishmal Kigon Ani Shalamadati Kol Tarkula Maushi Yom Shalmar Chachmas Yevanis, it should say. Kara Lava Mikra Zeh Lo Yom Shefer Tara Zeh Mipicha Tzev Dok Eze Hisha Shalo Yom Vela Laila Vimke Muchach the Chachma Yevanis Asur Lilmod Mipnesha Kasa Vigisabo Yom Vela Laila Aval Nira De Chachmas Yevanis De Hasam Aidi Chachmar Airi Chachma She'en La Shaychus Al Atara Klal Kimo Chachma She'hi Bemilitza O Masha, like the Gemara Tzamech Dalet indicates. V'chachma zos ein la shaychus klal ala Torah v'chsev v'gizah bo yom v'layla aval ha'chachmos lamod al ha'metzios v'seder ha'olam bevadai mutter lomod. So the Gemara that sits usher to learn Chachma Yevanis is not referring to things that relate to metzios, science, or the like. Right, he says later on, the only thing that were usher were things that didn't have any value in terms of understanding the Torah. So science perhaps is inferior to Torah, but it's sometimes a sulam lalos ba'al chachmas haTorah. Likewise, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that you have here as well on page 10 that refers very clearly as a negative attitude towards a philosophia. There's a whole bunch of interpretations in the Rishonim what exactly philosophia means. But again, the simple context of that story is that philosophia is not referring to philosophy in a classical sense, because it depicts a philosopher as a corrupt judge who basically presents himself as honest. Now, this doesn't mean that the Torah, that the Gemara is recommending the study of philosophy, and there's a difference if we look back at the Maral between science and philosophy and the like, but my point is that there aren't too many explicit, or maybe no explicit sources in the Gemara that would oppose the study of science or philosophy, as the Rambam recommends, but really the bigger question comes not from explicit sources that are against it as much as the argument from silence. The fact that the Gemara does not tell us that you should study philosophy, doesn't seem to really say you should study science either, though that could be debatable. There are sources that you could be used to study science. That's the, like the Gemara in Shabbos about the Chachma that the Chovas Alvavos quotes and the like, but certainly, at least when it comes to philosophy, there aren't, or there don't seem to be many Gemaras that say this is something we should pursue. And if Chazal are not telling us to do so, and presumably if Chazal thought it was valuable, they would have told us to do so. So that seems to be a very strong indictment.
I'm sorry, for somebody who's not, like for me, somebody who's not philosophically trained, Ramazan might be a perfect way of referring to something that's like not attached to this world, something that's in the Maral says people Melitzo Mashal.
Right. He's just building off of Rashi and Tosis on the Gemara Menachos. Melitzo Mashal. In other words, how does, again, just to look, they're coming from the context of that Gemara Menachos. How is it was somehow a means of communicating to tell them to stop bringing their supporting the Karban Tamid. Though they don't say it's, you know, an attempt to understand God, which is what philosophy is for the Rambam. Doesn't sound like it, at least. So again, the stronger critique, I think, would be the fact that the Gemara doesn't say anywhere that you should study philosophy. Even if we can't say it says you shouldn't, but the fact, you know, the Gemara, Chazal, tell us what we should do, how we should spend our time, what we should pursue. We saw last week many sources that tell us the value of studying Haggadah, but none of them said philosophy. One Rishon that makes this point is the Riaz. I neglected to put it on your sheets. The Riaz is discussing a topic that we'll hopefully return to later, but the Rambam's argument that anyone who has a corporeal understanding of God is a kofir. And the Rambam writes, sorry, the Riaz writes that that is inconceivable. Avchein hadavar yadu, again, I'm sorry, you don't have it. This is in the Kuntros Harayos on Sanhedrin, Tzadi Aleph Amad Aleph. And if you look at the Shelte Giborim on our Gemara, you'll see more or less the same text with some differences. Avchein hadavar yadu alakol, chachme lef, aval mi sheyita bekach, velo yarad la'amko shel davar umevin, Hamikros kipshuta and v'savet Hakadosh Baruch Hu bal tmuna lo nikramin. He doesn't say it's right necessarily, but we certainly cannot call someone who has a corporeal understanding of God a heretic. Shem kein hu adavar eich lo pirsim haTorah l'adavar zeh v'lo gilu chachamei haTalmud l'hodi adavar zeh kigalus ulehazir nashim v'amei haaretz shelo yehu avudin olamon. Right, the Torah, the Gemara. You know, it's a very easy mistake to make. And that's why the Rambam spends so much time arguing against it. But Chazal should have done so. Halo kama yisurim kalim kegon yisurim muksa ukiyotze b'zeh chibru chachamim kama lachos v'herubu kama dikdukim lamidan lahamid kol davar al mechono. When it comes to minor issues like muksa, we have so many halachos to prevent people from making even small errors. And yet, if it's so easy to make such a giant error concerning the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and something that would involve kfira, so shouldn't Chazal have said that? Ve'al davar zeh shekol ha'muna tluya bo v'yesh bo karis ba'olam hazeh v'olam haba eich lo horu chachamim al davar zeh begaloi ela vaday lo hikpidu lekach ela yamin adam ha'yichud kefi sichlo v'afilu hanashim kefi miyot sichlam Shamar Moshe, Alav HaShalom, Shema Yisrael HaShem Elokeinu HaShem Echad. Umashma, Lashon Shmua, V'Lashon Kabbalah, She'alpi Shmua, V'alpi Kabbalah, Ya'amin Davar Zeh. That's it. You believe in Achdus HaShem, Shema Yisrael HaShem Elokeinu HaShem Echad. Kol Achad Lefi Dargaso. V'lo Nasan Moshe, Torah Yisrael Ela, B'derech Emuno, V'derech Kabbalah. And the basis of our faith should be from the Torah and through tradition. V'chol Chachmei HaMishnah, V'chachmei HaTalmud. Lo nisasku ella b'derech kabbalo v'derech emuna v'lo holu lidrosh v'lachkor al inyan ha'ilos v'al inyan sharachachmos klal v'im hayu yechidim shahayu b'kien bahem lo hayu morin lam l'rabim shelo tzivsa Torah l'horos al eilad varim. So what would Rambam respond? This is a very potent challenge. So in terms of the question of why the Torah doesn't argue against, doesn't make clear the prohibition against the corporeality of God, the Rambam says that's simply untrue. There are many psukim in the Torah that tell us about God's incorporeality and warn against the corporeal understanding. The psukim say, ki lo ra'isem tmuna, etc., etc. Okay, fine. So there are psukim and Mari Chazal and the like that do warn against the corporeality of God. So that issue of again, divine corporeality, we'll return to later, Bezras Hashem. But what about the more basic charge, which is, again, if philosophy was something important, it was something valuable, then we would expect to see it within Chazal. So first of all, it happens to be that the Rambam very frequently does show how Midrashim refer to philosophical concepts. Very frequently in Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam will present a philosophical idea, and he'll say, and this is what Chazal mean, and he quotes Midrashim and Gemaras that support that understanding. Many of them are very powerful interpretations. So it's not entirely true that Chazal don't refer to philosophy, but still, why is it not more explicit? Why is it not more overt? Or to put it differently, why is there such a strong reliance on non-Jewish philosophers? Certainly in Mor Nevuchim. So many quotations of Aristotle, other philosophers. Why can't we find that wisdom in Chazal, in the Torah? Why do we have to turn to non-Jewish sources? So the Rambam writes that originally we did have our own tradition of philosophy. That's why we find Shlomo HaMelech referring to it in his works. However, Jewish philosophical writings were never written down. And that's because it would have been prohibited to write it down. It's Bichlal, the Isser of Dvarim Shebal Peh, Iyatai Rishai, Lemos Ran Bichsav. And therefore, these matters were eventually forgotten due to persecution. Now, the truth of the matter is that the Rambam writes that the same thing was almost going to happen with respect to all of Torah Shebal Peh. In the times of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, due to the intense persecution and the Roman prohibition against the studying and the public teaching of Torah, so Torah Shebal Peh was going to be forgotten. Eis lasos l'Hashem hefevur sarasecha, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi violated the Torah in order to save the Torah, and he wrote down the Mishnah. However, no such thing was done with respect to the philosophical teachings and the philosophical traditions at the time. Why? So there could be a number of reasons, but likely it has to do with the fact that philosophical teachings are things, as we've seen, that cannot be publicly taught. When it comes to Torah Shebal Peh, there's an Isser Ksiva, but of course there's a mitzvah to be mefarsim all of Torah Shebal Peh be-rabin. When it comes to esoteric wisdom and philosophy, there's a prohibition. It's aser to teach these things publicly. They have to be communicated within very limited contexts, one-on-one, and only to a Talmud that's roi lekach, and that Talmud has to have reached a very high madrega, and so on and so forth. And therefore, the option of writing these things down to save that Jewish philosophical tradition did not happen. So therefore, at times, we have to turn to non-Jewish sources. Again, not because we didn't at one point have our own tradition. We did, but it was lost. So how is it justified to turn to non-Jewish sources? The Rambam famously writes in Shmona Prakim, you have it here on page 11, that accept the truth from whoever says it. If it's true, it doesn't matter who said it. Truth is truth. And therefore, there's really no objection to going ahead and turning to non-Jewish sources for this wisdom, as long as it's true. The previous idea that I just told you from the Rambam, you could see on the paragraph above that, on the top of page 11, know that many branches of science relating to the correct solution of these problems once were cultivated by our forefathers, but were in the course of time neglected, especially in consequence of the tyranny that barbarous nations exercised over us. Now, this relates to a couple of points. Number one is if it's actually usher to write these things down, how could the Rambam write Mo Nevuchim? The Rambam deals with that issue at length. He acknowledges that in a sense it is usher to write the Mo Nevuchim, and therefore he has to come up with all sorts of solutions to solve that problem, among them to make it convoluted and include contradictions and the like. So we'll talk about that, God willing, next time. But there's another objection, which is that, okay, maybe we could study philosophy because Kabbalah Sa'emes Mimisha Maro, but there's a problem. The problem is that isn't philosophy full of heresy? Isn't Greek philosophy very much antithetical to the Torah's beliefs? And to that, the Rambam essentially answers no. Take a look at Mor Nevuchim 325, again on page 11. When you examine this view and that of the philosophers, taking into consideration all the preceding chapters that are connected with the subject, you will find that there is no other difference of opinion in regards to any portion of the universe except that the philosophers believe in the eternity of the universe and we believe in creation. Generally, here the Rambam saying that the view of Chazal of the Torah and the view of the philosophers concerning the nature of the universe was more or less compatible, except for certain things, such as the nature of Bria Olam. Aristotle argued for the eternity of matter. That's wrong, that is against the Torah, and the Rambam makes clear that the Torah's view is that there was Bereshis, there was Bria Yesh Me'ayin. Again, we could return to that discussion another time. But fundamentally, for the most part, there is in fact compatibility between much of that which is found in Aristotle and other philosophers and that which could be found in the Torah. Now, why is it that there are so many perceived contradictions? So the Rambam writes, that's because of one of two things. Either sometimes there are actually discrepancies between the Torah and philosophy, or it's a result of a misunderstanding of Torah, or a misunderstanding of philosophy. And that's really one of the goals of the Marne Nevuchim. The goals of the Marne Nevuchim is to show that, to correct those misunderstandings of the Torah that might lead a person to understand that Torah and philosophy contradict, or to correct those misunderstandings of philosophy that lead a person to believe that there are contradictions. And that's really what the goal of Marne Nevuchim is. Marne Nevuchim is a letter or series of letters written to a certain person. This person has studied a little bit of Torah and a little bit of philosophy and is full of angst. He's navuch. He's confused because he sees so many contradictions. And the Rambam shows us that, in fact, the contradictions are really not as great as they would seem. Yeah?
So I'm just a little confused. Is the Rambam saying that philosophy is basically... So he's saying that philosophy is very similar to this, except for certain contradictions, but is he saying that way back when everyone had philosophy and it wasn't yet forgotten, that everyone was living in the same place and only afterwards philosophy diverged and then they added contradictions? Or is it like the Chachamim of the world, they didn't have the issue to write down philosophy, so they wrote it down and then they did.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think even in the days of Shlomo, I don't think the Rambam was saying everybody knew philosophy, but certainly the Chachamim did, and Shlomo did, and the great people did. In other words, there are actually, interestingly, now it's not time to go into it, there are a number of sources, some Midrashim, that indicate that Aristotle or Socrates or the Yevanim got their Chachma from the Torah, from Shlomo and the like. But even leaving those aside, in other words, first of all, there is no such thing as philosophy. Philosophy says X, right? There are various views among the philosophers and their debates, and some were right and some were wrong, and the like. And surely errors did creep in. And the Rambam, let's say, going back to the creation of the example of creation, where he felt Aristotle erred, he explains why Aristotle came to his conclusion and why the Rambam thinks he's wrong. And he says he's wrong, really, for two reasons. Again, we'll get back to that.
Did the Rambam say that there was always volume of Torah in terms of our philosophy? Because it's not that anybody would just speak with secular philosophers. And those all endless, but how does one know what to do or not to do? Because if you don't have volume of Torah...
Exactly. So I think the Rambam could probably say you don't need Bali Misora. Because if you study Torah and you know how to think, then you could assess the ideas in philosophy and decide whether they are true or not true, whether they contradict the Torah or they don't contradict the Torah. In other words, the reason why, again, to go back to the creation example, the reason why the Rambam rejects Aristotle's eternity of matter is on two grounds. A, it's not proven. In other words, even from the perspective of philosophy and science, it has not been demonstrated. And B, more importantly, it's against the Torah. Not that it's against the psukim of the Torah that you could deal with, but it's against the underlying principle of the Torah, which has miracles and hashkacha and the like, and for some reason, not for now, that can't exist if matter was eternal. So he rejects Aristotle based off of the Torah. So the Rambam certainly agrees that Torah is the ultimate arbiter, and should anything go against the Torah, we will reject it. And therefore, someone studies Torah and also knows how to think. The Rambam had tremendous trust, we'll see this in other places as well, in the human intellect, in the capacity of the human mind to discover and apprehend the truth. And between Torah and Seichel, a person will be able to decipher and select that which is correct from that which is incorrect. Okay, now, as you all know, many Rishonim disagreed with the Rambam concerning his view on philosophy, the Maimonidean controversies and the like. Later on, the Rashba, along with other leaders, for example, of Barcelona, assigned a 50-year cherem against the study of Greek philosophy for anyone below the age of 25. Take a look on page 12 towards the bottom. Did I include that? I didn't put that here, but we'll get to it in a moment. But note how even the Rashba didn't make a lifetime ban against the study of philosophy. Rather, those who weren't yet ready. Now, generally speaking, those who reject philosophy do so, or they fall into one of two camps. Those who categorically reject philosophy, perhaps the Riaz that we saw before is an example of that, and those who feel that it's too dangerous and therefore shouldn't be pursued. Just one example of that latter approach is from the Noda Behuda Netzlach. The Gemara in Brachos, at the bottom of page 11, says that Reb Elazar gave advice on his deathbed, Min'u b'neichem min ha-higayon. So don't study higayon. What exactly is higayon? So actually, many of the Rishonim say it's referring to, like the Rashbam says, it's referring to studying pshat. But the Tzlach understands higayon is a reference to logic. And he writes over here, you can see it on page 12, that if the study of logic is banned, because even though it's valuable, the Tzlach writes a fascinating thing. He says studying logic has value, but because it could lead someone to study philosophy, it was banned. So Kol Shekein, studying philosophy itself. So we don't study these things because of the dangers that are involved. And that's an example of the latter. We'll see maybe later on Rabbi Hanan Wasserman takes a similar type of approach concerning Emunah, that even if we accept those Rishonim who felt that Emunah should be based off of proof, nowadays that's too dangerous. And others, like we said, reject it on more categorical points. Take a look at this famous comment of the Gra on page 12. Of the philosophia hitasu, the study of philosophy caused the Rambam to err. Birov lekha, with its fair speech, lefaresh agmara hakol bederach haltziyi vilakor osan mipshatan. Is a reference to the Rambam's rejection of any type of magic and the like. But he refers to philosophy as cursed, and it's something that that's enticing. It's almost like compared to a zona. So one very interesting question is, how did those who prohibit the study of philosophy deal with the Rambam? In other words, after the Maimonidean controversies died down and the like, there's no one who would belittle the Nesher HaGadol, the Rambam, the master of Kol HaTorah, someone who was a Gadol Shebigdolim. And therefore, that raises an important question. Well, if you think that studying philosophy is such a terrible thing, how do you justify what the Rambam did? So one thinker that dealt with this problem is the Rivash. In the Tshuva, you have it on the bottom of page 12. The Rivash makes a number of arguments. First of all, he writes that you shouldn't study philosophy because it contains heretical ideas, such as the eternity of matter, the rejection of providence, and therefore you shouldn't study it. And second of all, he writes that philosophy, like we saw before, is not necessary to be mekayim the mitzvah of emunah and the like. One could do that without philosophy in its ideal form. He invokes Rav Haigon and the Rashba's ban as precedents for prohibiting philosophy. As we noted, they certainly don't go as far as the Rivash does. And after basically saying it's absolutely usher to study philosophy, so he deals with the question, how could the Rambam have studied philosophy? And he writes, Avein lahavi raya mea Rambam, Zal, ki hu lamad kodem lachen kol haTorah kula, b'shleimas halachos v'agados tosefto sifra sifrei v'chulei talmuda bavli v'yushalmi k'mo sh'nir m'sefer mishnah Torah shechiber. First of all, the Rambam, he knew kol tarkula before he studied philosophy. Now, that might be true, though you can't really bring a raya from the fact that he wrote Mishnah Torah first, before Mar Nevuchim, because clearly in, let's say, Persha Mishnayos, which he wrote before the Mishnah Torah, he refers to the study of philosophy and his having studied philosophy and the value of philosophy. But nevertheless, it certainly might be the case that the Rambam had mastered kol tarkula before studying philosophy. Then the Rivash advances a debatable thesis that the Rambam wrote Mor Nevuchim begeder dama lahashiv l'apikores, to reject the heretical notions that were prevalent at the time concerning things like hashgacha and things like creation. He writes kedei lahashiv es apikores asa sefer mora listor hamofsim v'arayo shehevi hafilosof l'kaim kadmas olam, to contradict the proofs brought by Aristotle in favor of the eternity of matter, v'chein binyan hashkacha, u'lefisha yu bizmano harbi miyisrael nevuchim b'kriyat Torah mipnei ma shalamdu menachachmai. So that's why he wrote the Mor Nevuchim. Now it is true that in the Mor Nevuchim he defends the traditional beliefs of the Torah concerning hashkacha, concerning Briyas Ha'olam, but it's also pretty clear that the Rambam did feel that there is inherent value to studying philosophy, and it's recommended. It's not just begeder lahashav la'apikorsim. It's interesting. The Rivash writes that the Mor Nevuchim was begeder ma lahashav. The Ramban, in his famous letter defending the Rambam, and the Rambam is a study of philosophy, writes that the Rambam was successful. He writes that the Rambam basically saved Spanish and Provençal upper Jewish class and brought them back to faith. The Rambam writes, this is in translation, they have filled their bellies with the foolishness of the Greeks. They make fun of their trusting souls. They did not enter the profundity into the ways of Torah. The ways of alien children suffice for them. But for the words of Rambam, but for the fact that they live out of the mouth of his words, they would have slipped away entirely. So the Ramban writes that many, many, many of the Jews living in Spain and Provence at the time would have gone off the derech had the Rambam not saved them and showed them that belief in Torah is compatible with the study of philosophy. It isn't this obscurantist idea. So the Rivash's point that the Rambam was written lahashav l'apikorsim, that might not have been his intent, but it was the result. He did save many people in that way. Then the Rivash has another distinction to justify the Rambam. V'yesh lomar k'mo she'amruzal al Reb Meir heichi gamar Torah mipume de'acher v'haisa tshuva Rebbe Meir kara ashkach v'darash hat oz necha u'shma divrei chachamim v'libcha tashis l'dati. So the Gemara basically says, Ayin Sham, that it was appropriate for someone as great as Reb Meir to learn Torah from Acher, despite the fact that he was an apikoros. And likewise, it was okay for the Rambam to study Torah from, or study philosophy from Aristotle. It's interesting. The Gemara says that what's the scriptural basis for the permissibility? Hat aznachos shma divrei chachamim. So he says the Rambam meant to be merames that was his heter, because if you look at the very beginning of Mor Nevuchim, he quotes that pasuk, the same pasuk that justifies Reb Meir learning from Elisha ben Avuya. The Rambam opens his Mishnah Torah. So it's a remez that he's saying, you know, you're asking me how do I have the reshus to do this? I'm following the precedent of Reb Meir. But then the Rivash concludes that even the Rambam did not emerge unscathed, and some of his theories are false due to the study of philosophy. So he quotes the example of the Tzarfatit. The Rambam thinks that she didn't actually fully die. It wasn't full-fledged Trias HaMesim. His position on Matan Torah, where Klal Yisrael sort of heard an undifferentiated call. his position on whether angels can take on a physical form. Rambam rejects that. And the Rav Asher says, how did he make these big mistakes? Because he studied philosophy. And then he says, well, maybe even the Rambam didn't actually mean what he said. He only said them to sort of placate those who would not have considered any other option. Again, sort of begeder malahashav lapikores. But his conclusion is that if the philosophy harmed great, great thinkers like Rambam and Ralbag concerning his theory on Shemesh Begivodom and other issues that Ralbag says, so if philosophy hurt great, great people like Rambam and Ralbag, so certainly, we regular people, the Rav Asher says, cannot study philosophy. Another justification sometimes given for the Rambam is a forged letter in which he was Chozer B'Sof Yamav. I guess we don't have time to do that today. How do we paskin? So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, Reish Mem Vav Sif Dalid, top of page 13. Hagat, the Rama writes, Ve'en la'adam lo'mod ki im mikra mishnav gemara poskim hanim shachim achareihem. Uvizeh yikne ha'olam hazeh ve'ha'olam haba. Aval lo b'limud char chachmos. So the Rama quotes the Rav Asher, seems to say that it's asr. We call makom mutter lomod ba'akrai b'shar chachmos. Uvilvad shelo yehu sifrei minim v'zehu nikra bein hachachamim tiul b'pardes. The Gra gets very upset about that as well. V'ein la'adam l'tal b'pardes rak la'acha shemile kriso basa v'yayin, like we saw in the Rambam. V'hu leida itzavahantar v'dinah mitzvos, quoting the Rambam. So the Rama is quite remarkable. He thinks that we paskin both like the Rav Asher and the Rambam. Now, the Rav Asher obviously thought he was disagreeing with the Rambam, and the Rama was aware of that. But the Rambam, the Rama's conclusion is basically, yes, there is value in the study of philosophy, and that's Masha Nikru Chachamim Til B'Pardes. He accepts the Rambam's definition of Pardes that we saw last week. But at the same time, he says that can never be the Iker. It should only be the Tafel, like we saw last week in that letter from the Rama. Just one other ha'ara, two minor ha'aros, I guess I'll just mention them in passing, because I want to go on, Be'ezras Hashem, to the next topic next week. But having noted the Rav Asher's harsh critique on the study of philosophy, it's interesting that he had a lot of uncertainty about Kabbalah as well. And that despite having inherited the mystical tradition of the Ramban, he was hesitant about certain, at least, perversions that he witnessed in Kabbalah, and he lambasts those who study Kabbalah without a proper understanding or qualified teacher, especially those who are concerned about Sfiros during Tefillah and the like. Take a look on page 13 for that famous Tshuvas HaRav Asher. And the final thing that I want to mention to you today, we mentioned last week the Rama's letter in which he said both Kabbalah and philosophy are begeder elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim with respect to understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Kook develops this idea in a very powerful essay that you have here. And there Rav Kook basically writes, not only are both of them true, but why it is that it was necessary that for the most part most thinkers that engaged in philosophy thought that those who studied Kabbalah were totally off, and why it is that those who studied Kabbalah thought that those who studied philosophy were totally off. Why, if Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, was there such a struggle? Did they take such a combative approach? And his answer is basically that these are two methods to coming to the MS. And sometimes to come to the MS, you have to take your Mahalich Ad HaSof. And therefore, the Mekubalim had to take their Mahalich Ad HaSof, and the philosophers had to take their Mahalich Ad HaSof. But after all the dust has settled, even though there might be some superiority to Kabbalah, essentially our approach is Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. We could look at the Rambam, we should study the Mor Nevuchim, we should see his godless. Don't think that these ideas in the Rambam come from secular sources. They come really from the Pnimius HaTorah, and same with Kabbalah. And we should take the best of both. And even if you have a Natiya one way or a Natiya the other way, so you don't have to study both, but you should at least recognize that there's true MS in both Alchem. Okay, have a good Shabbos. Anyone who, yes?